You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today. Okay, let's do some quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. That's obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. To reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. Here's the thing. Information is power. Information is money. Literally, the currency of today's world of entrepreneurship is information. And if you could bring all of the information about your business into one dashboard, this is incredibly valuable. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of the truth about your business. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all of your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. This is so valuable. You just hit a button and you can see all the information about your business instead of having to like call five different departments and get all these emails and put it all together and make sense of it. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show. Today on the James Altucher Show.
We have the technology right now to grow younger. I talk about this with Sergey Young, the author of The Science and Technology of Growing Young. We talk about everything from good habits for anti-aging, the technologies that exist now, to the technologies that are going to exist in just 5 to 10 years. If you're born right now, it's very likely that you'll live to be at least 200, according to Sergey. And he explains why, he explains all the latest research, he explains what you could do right now, even if you're not born right now, if you're 50, 60, I'm 53, I want to live to 200. I hope I don't get bored. So again, his book is The Science and Technology of Growing Young, and he gives practical advice, dividing into two parts. The first part is, what is all the technology? Where are we heading? Second part is where he starts to give me real practical advice and what specific technologies he's waiting for that he's confident are going to help him grow younger. So enjoy. Here's Sergey Young with The Science and Technology of Growing Young. Whether it's anti-aging, anti-stress, career success, case in point, not everybody is a good-looking person, but you need to kind of present your best self.
To shine a little bit.
Yeah. What's on the library of someone who wants to live 200 years old? So I'm seeing about 30 or 40 books in the background here. I'm sure you have more, but what are some of these books? So you have the Eat to Beat Disease.
Yeah, okay. So William Lee and Eat to Beat Disease. It's Ray Kurzweil called Fantastic Voyage. And
Fantastic Voyage. I don't think I know that one actually by
oh,
Ray.
Really?
You're on the XPRIZE committee, which he's involved in, right?
Yeah, exactly. And what else? Jamie Metzl and Hacking Darwin.
Jamie's been on the podcast a bunch of times. Very good guy.
Okay, cool.
I have to assume you have David Sinclair's book.
Yeah, obviously.
On,
David
lifespan.
Sinclair, a very, very good friend. And
He's on the podcast a bunch of times.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure in that. Yeah, it's the Plant Paradox by Stephen Gundry. So that's...
Stephen's been on a bunch of times, yeah, okay. both with this that book great. And the recipe book.
Have you had Scott Galloway?
Of course. Scott Galloway's a regular.
Okay, I love it. I mean, obviously, I started with the four, but then it's... he has the other book called... happiness. What was the happiness? Okay, the happiness book. There's some other word there, which I think is.
Oh, and I see you have Factfulness by Han Rosling, who has not been on because he's sadly passed away.
I have Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker. This is actually the book which changed my approach to sleep, like my view of this sleeping overall in terms of the impact on our health and longevity as well. Latest Dave Asprey book.
Oh yeah, I have that book. Dave has of course been a regular.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of fasting. I fast 36 hours a week. I'm actually on today's my fasting day, so it's Monday evening to Wednesday morning. What else? I'm a big fan of Jared Diamond.
Yeah, and I see Guns, Germs, and Steels in the background, and you're like, holding up Collapse.
Yeah, my whole journey with Jared Diamond started obviously with this book, but then other books are just incredible, and specifically like rapamycin started with one of the Pacific Ocean islands, and that's one of our longevity drug candidates, right? So it's very interesting interrelation with what he says. It's Jonathan Haidt, Happiness Hypothesis.
Oh yeah,
amazing.
Sure.
I kind of like this book. What else? James Clear, Atomic Habits.
Yeah, good guy, friend of mine.
Of course. I mean, you know like half of the planet anyway, so you have a very... And I think it's Andrew Scott, the new...
I don't know that one.
Yeah, because he's the author of the 100-Year Life book. He's British professor, I think, in London School of Economics, but... So I'm actually very jealous about what you do and your role, because my book journey was a 3 years journey, and I miss that, because in the process of writing I had so many interesting conversations, like Martin Rothblatt, David Sinclair, George Church, Bob Langer, the founder of Moderna, even Peter Jackson, about the future of human avatars. And like ethics of longevity and us living much longer. I mean, it's beautiful. I'm already dreaming about my second book.
Oh, what do you think you'll say? You know, you should write fiction next, because you bring up in your book, and I don't want to get too much into the ethics of longevity because I don't think it's interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
But but you bring up this concept of, will there be, and Yuval Harari brings this up also in...
Yeah.
Homo Deus, but you bring up the possibility that there might be some people who are, because of wealth or other means, get to live longer and other people don't. Well, that divides society into two strata.
Yeah.
I had this conversation with Yuval Harari where technology, as you know, moves so fast, like look at the cheapness now of the sequencing of the human genome, that I don't think there's enough time for two classes to be created, that technology will move forward so fast that doesn't matter how much money. It's like the human genome now, 20 years ago, cost $1 million to sequence. Now it costs less than $50.
It was actually like $3 billion. Right now, like for $200, you can do, you kind of cool with that. I agree with that.
But
yeah, sorry. No, James, go on.
Oh, I just want to add, Roger Zelazny, a science fiction writer from my youth, has a book like this where a bunch of human-like beings figure out immortality and become gods over the other humans that they suppress.
Yeah.
But and then one rebels and on and on. But I don't think it's an... your whole stuff on the ethics of immortality interests me zero, because it's clear we all want to live longer and have a higher quality of life, and anyone who is a philosopher about this is just full of shit. But I want to introduce you, though, as you're Sergey Young, founder of the Longevity Vision Fund, which I want to talk about a little bit.
Yeah.
The book's called The Science and Technology of Growing Young, an insider's guide to the breakthroughs that will dramatically extend our lifespan and what you can do right now. Forward by Peter Diamandis, who's an old friend, has been on this podcast many times, and Ray Kurzweil. who is author of the book, famous book, The Singularity Is Near. And every few months, I have someone on, and this goes back to 2014. I had Dan Buettner on with the Blue Zones, and then more recently, David Sinclair with his book, Lifespan. But I'm always interested in longevity and the latest research, and your book is great. It covers so many different issues, I'm really glad you're on. Thank you for coming on. It's a good book, and I'm glad I can ask you all the questions so that I selfishly, even if we have zero listeners, I selfishly will want to live longer.
I'm very excited.
Oh, good. So just to start it off, how long do you think someone born today will be able to live? And more importantly, how long will I be able to live?
Okay, how old are you, James?
53.
Okay, I'm 49, so we kind of cool.
You're a young baby.
Yeah. So remember, I mean, we're living in pretty unique intersection of breakthroughs in science and technology, in very unique point of evolution. I think first time in our history, in the next 10 to 20 years, we will have the science and technology to break this sound barrier of 122 years. This is the maximum lifespan that we have for the record on Earth, thanks to this beautiful French woman who died in the age of 122, 20 years ago.
And I love the story where somebody offered to buy her house in a form of an annuity,
yeah,
where he would pay her, you know, certain amount per month until she dies, and then she outlived him.
Exactly. And then his family was paying the same thing until she died. She actually dropped smoking at the age of 117.
So, okay, so... And we'll segue and break off in different parts.
So, well, I just want to come back to your question, right? Because we're going to be selfish and egoistic today a little bit, right? Just trying to serve ourselves and humanity in the same time. So for you and me, I think we will be able to break the sound barrier. So it's going to be obviously above 122 years. I would actually think it's going to be anywhere between 130 and 150 years. For someone who is born today, 200 years is not even a number. Because what we will achieve in a few decades from now, that like every 5 to 10 years, you will need to make a choice. Whether you're extending your healthy and happy life by another decade or so. It's going to be like a series of life extension decisions that we would need to do in the future. I'm very optimistic about our ability to break this sound barrier. Having said that, I really want to be upfront and sincere about this whole thing. Right now, it's a promise that at least you and I, we will not be able to confirm, you know, for the next, 70 years. So in a way, like whatever the number I'll promise you today, it's going to be another 50 or 70 years until we actually, you know, we'll be 100 or 120 years old and we'll be able to check. So in a way, it's an easy thing for me to promise. We just need to live longer, but like world in 50 years from now going to be completely different.
Well, I'm holding you to it, Sergey. If I die before the age of 100, I'm coming after you. So
okay, great. I love it. I love to be accountable.
From what I understand from your book and other books I've read and people I've spoken to, you could almost divide this into layers. Like there's the habits we could change now that will make us live longer.
Yep.
And you say this in your book, first rule of longevity, don't die. Mm-hmm. And so there are a lot of things you can do to alleviate the risk of heart disease, strokes, cancers, you know, like you say, eliminate smoking, sleep better, eat better, don't drink alcohol, and so on. And then the next layer might be, like as David Sinclair puts it, treating aging as an illness. So there's things like NMN and rapamycin that you just mentioned, you know, pills that we could take that maybe now will help us. And then furthermore, there's potential technologies like the Yamanaka factors or stem cells. And then of course, there's the science fiction aspect, which is of telepresence and avatars. And you know, maybe we could put our consciousness in another mortal shell and keep on doing that. And also with genomics, we can reverse any genetically related disease. And as George Church mentions, every disease is a genetically related disease. Yeah. So that gives us a good chance. So let's start off. I want to skip the habits part because everybody pretty much has a good sense of...
Yeah, I mean, it's really obvious. Yeah, people feel very bored when I tell them that they need to eat healthy and do their annual checkup.
Yeah, I haven't done the second part of that in 30 years, but I should do it. But I do want to mention about the eating is that you find that a lot of foods do create inflammation. It's obviously better to eat clean organic food than candy all the time. So this, you know, and you mentioned earlier, you fast 36 hours every week. I do intermittent fasting. I try not to eat, just like Stephen Gundry, I try not to eat until like between 5 and 7 p.m. and, you know, eat little and eat early. But you don't want to restrict calories too much or you have an unpleasant life. But I do believe that if some foods have poison in them, even small amounts, the less you eat of poison, the better you are and the less taxing it is on your intestines and so on to digest too much food and so on. But let's go on and I'll let you speak now. The first thing I want to ask is, what's the story with NMN, you know, or you know, NAD plus related pills and, you know, resveratrol, you know, the stuff that David Sinclair talks about?
Okay. So basically what's going to happen is in the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to have completely different kind of form of drugs. And right now, if you go to pharmacy and you ask for pills against aging, they will think you crazy or they will send you to cosmetic section or supplements. So what we have right now in development, we have a number of longevity drug candidates. And the beauty of them, they're actually working to find aging rather than particular disease. So that's going to be a revolution.
So this is the concept of viewing aging directly as an illness as opposed to trying to slow down heart attacks and strokes and cancer. All of these are byproducts of aging as opposed to aging being byproducts of those.
Exactly. So like every drug of this kind is going to be super efficient. So it's going to be at least 5 to 10 times more efficient in terms of helping you to live healthier, longer, and even happier life. So that's actually very important to understand. Why is that happening? And as always in medicine, part of the inventions happening just simply by coincidence. So that was the case with metformin. Metformin is anti-diabetic drug. Is a very old drug. It's 50 or 60 years old, right? It's generic now. In fact, if you speak to Neil Barzilai, the man behind the TAME trial, this huge multi-thousand people trial that we're starting in the US to test whether metformin is a longevity drug, it's an anecdote. For his trial, metformin is cheaper than placebo. Can you imagine that? So this is how cheap this thing can be.
And so just to be clear, metformin is a prescription drug for diabetes. And do you find that a lot of anti-diabetes drugs tend to be related to anti-aging?
So what we've seen, and this is how it works with the diet intervention, and whatever can lower your level of glucose in the blood tend to work much better in terms of your life extension. So this is not like the only candidate or it's not the only substance that can extend your life. Just simply helping you to regulate your glucose cycle. So that's pretty important. And like, even if you speak to the most skeptical guys, like, I don't know, Aubrey de Grey, even he agrees that caloric restriction and managing your glucose level from metformin or through diet restriction is like a simple way to eat 2, 3, or even 5 happy and healthy years to your life. So that's very important.
And let me ask this. So metformin's prescription, but from what I've been told, I'm not a doctor, obviously, from what I've been told, and a drug I'm taking, not a drug, but a pill, is berberine, which has a very similar effect as metformin, but it's not a prescription drug.
Yeah, you can take. Exactly. So what people ask me, like, whether I should take metformin or not. What I'm telling them, first of all, I'm not a doctor, right? So they should see their own doctor and discuss that. My general rule, if you're above 60, it probably makes sense to push and take metformin now. If you're below that, there's a number of lifestyle interventions you can do now and wait for the outcome of the TAME trial, which is going to be available to us in 5 years from now, to see if you should take this longevity pill.
And how are they testing for longevity with metformin?
So basically what is happening is, well, they have two groups, the one with who taking metformin, the one who's taking placebo. People don't know what they taking, and different different doses of metformin. So that's one. They're looking at two things. One is very old and one is very new. The very old thing is like, what are the mortality rates in these groups? Like, how many people died by the end of the study or in the course of the study? And like, compare this this thing. And again, I'm telling that this is very old thing because this is how studies, this is how we thought about human trials through the whole evolution of our healthcare. So you just take a group of very old people and you sit and wait until some of them die. This is a very long feedback loop. So, and this is very old thing. I think what we've created in the last 5 to 7 years, we've created biological clocks. So right now, you can take your blood test, look at number of indicators, like probably the maximum one is like 44, and then you create your biological age index. So whatever is your passport age, your body age can be different. And so they're going to measure number of indicators. They're going to measure biological clocks of participants in all groups and compare, is there any life extension or age reversal effect that metformin has on particular group? So that's actually very important, because with biological clocks, you can measure your age and how old or young your body and mind is almost, you know, every day or every month. So your feedback loop for a lot of experiments in healthcare and longevity is right now completely different and very short, which is great.
So Sergey, a couple of questions about that. One is, some of that must be genetic. Like, are there people who genetically have a biological age because that is much lower than their actual age because their parents and grandparents and great grandparents were also very good at that?
Of course. So, and this is actually why I'm always bringing the fact that I forgot what's the name of this wonderful French woman, that she was smoking until the age of 117. So right now, if you look at centenarians, this is the people who live to 100 years and above, it's a wrong model for longevity because they've been really lucky in genetic lottery. I mean, obviously, they had their environment right, their food right, right? They're living in mountains or in islands. They have to walk and they have to work physically. So they're just not sitting on a chair all the time. But what is happening right now, everyone who lives really longer has this certain component of being lucky in genetic lottery. And this is exactly what we want to fix. So if you look at the studies, depending on the study, 30 or 40% of our ability to live longer is predefined by our genes. You can be lucky or you can be unlucky. I mean, you can get rare genetic disease. And why we say this is, I mean, this disease is rare, they're not that rare at all. 400 million people on Earth suffer from what we call rare disease. They are not only of genetic nature, but that's a lot as well. So, and what has happened in the last 10 years, we've developed our understanding of longevity genes. So right now we know almost all 3,000 genes in our DNA, which are responsible for our ability to live longer in a healthy and, again, in happy state. So as soon as we have an opportunity and we have the technology and science to change these genes, replace them, or just change an expression of them, or use alternative tools for our DNA to express it in a way which supports us living longer in a healthier state, that's going to be great. So in 10 or 20 years time, we'll have this ability to amend our DNA. And my belief that what will prevent us from using that is not going to be science, it's not going to be technology, it's going to be public perception, it's going to be regulation and the ethical things.
Yeah, so I want to talk about genetics in a little bit, because I think I feel like we're near a tipping point there. And by tipping point, I mean, who knows, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, but close enough in terms of the age of civilization. But so we've mentioned metformin. What do you think about these NAD plus drugs like NMN or NR or whatever?
Okay, so what is happening? There's like whatever these substances we see in pharmacies, it's two very distinctive and completely different categories that we see. So one is drug, right, or prescription drugs. They've been developed in the course of at least 12 years with a cost of, on average, $2.6 billion. They went through three phases of different trials, and they've been approved by FDA. Okay? So that's very important. And this is where you can find reliable solution with the zero or minimal side effects. So this is where my hope is. I'm really looking for drug against aging, not necessarily for supplement against aging, right? So that's right. That's my response, number one. That's why I'm more optimistic about rapamycin, metformin in the midterm. In 3, 5, 7 years from now, we're going to have it, right? And it's completely different safety protocol and safety regime, if you want, for the long-term consumption of this. So then you have the other extreme, is supplements. Well, the problem with supplements, they're not regulated. So in a way, you just self-report that it's kind of safe and it can produce certain results, but it's not necessarily confirmed by regulator, by FDA, who's responsible for your safety. So that's a tricky thing. So like my only option to build a judgment for NMN or any like NAD plus booster that we have now on the market, it just, you know, ask some people and see if they get any results. So when people started to take NMN, and I'm meeting someone from who's just crazy about longevity. NMN is a current hype and current love. I also have it here. Yeah, I can show it to you. Unfortunately, not to the audience, right? It's Alive by Nature.
Which is the brand that David Sinclair recommends.
So it's actually, it's sublingual. So you just put it in your mouth. I think it's a more natural and more efficient way to consume an MA. So I'm taking this. So I spoke to Eric Verdin, the head of Buck Institute of Aging Research, David Sinclair, Peter Diamandis, and consistent feedback that I'm having. Guys, when we started to take it, like, our performance, level of energy change in the course of 30 to 60 days. So I tend to believe in that. So that's thought number one. And thought number two, the beauty of supplements, I'm a big believer in supplements, even with all the caution and risk that I just explained, that it's not regulated, you need to control the quality, no one knows if they work or not. The beauty of supplements is because of placebo effect. So if you actually believe it works for you for 30 to 40%. In fact, in some of the medical trials for drugs, like the biggest competition the drug received was from placebo group because people believed that it works and it's actually made a lot of changes to their body and the health of it. So in a way, I'm cool with 30 to 40% effect. So I'm taking somewhere around like 20 supplements every day, again, and if in even if this is defined by placebo effect, I'm like typical placebo guy. My motto is to live 200 years in 25 years old body. And when I started to reiterate it every morning and every evening, I actually became younger, full of energy. And like every morning when I wake up, I have 3/4 of my life ahead of me.
What do you mean? Like you say that to yourself
You just like, you know, do manifestation or you just have it a thought like, I'm going to live 200 years in the body of 25 years old man. But I'm adding like healthy and happy, because we need to be careful with what we're asking for from universe. So I'm like, it should be 200 healthy and happy years, not just statistically average years.
Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like, I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a three-year period, and I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs, and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, of course, the first thing I thought was, I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb, because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like, I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a three-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like, to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours, and they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers, and he waited a little too long, and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you could try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop, really, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
At the UPS Store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS Store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
This is related to kind of the old school thinking, but what's the relationship between stress and longevity? I know stress creates inflammation in the cells, which creates, I don't know, all the things you listed as causes of aging, you know, later on in the book. You know, how much do you focus on reducing stress?
Very much so. So when we move to our, like, what I can do now, boring horizon, I have 5 buckets there. So first is checkup, and the last, number one, called peace of mind. And it's funny that you're saying that, James. Then every time when we start to think about our health, our default mode, we're thinking about our physical health. So we often neglect the idea and the priority of supporting our mental health, right? And releasing stress. So that's very important. What is happening is the following. We all, living in today's world, have extremely high cortisol level. And cortisol is stress hormone level. And that's okay. And it was designed to be that way by Mother Nature, but only for the very small period of time. Like we see something scary in the forest, we need to run. But then just a few minutes, I don't know, 30 minutes after this response, the level of cortisol should go down. And this is your healthy condition, like predetermined by Mother Nature and evolution. What is happening now? We have these constant shocks. We have this constantly negative news, right, from the media. We have the stress at work. We have the stress at, and, you know, on the streets, in the family. So the problem of humanity today, we have extremely high, consistently high level of cortisol in our blood. And this is really bad because it takes out the space from the other very important hormones, like the one who, you know, make us men and women. It actually prevents you from recovery during sleep. And it's actually like pretty unhealthy. So statistically, with very high level of cholesterol, you're going to be living anywhere between 3 to 7 years shorter than the average.
And I feel like, you know, it's sort of like you said earlier, we used to see a lion and our cortisol would spike up. We'd run and then the cortisol would come down. But now we're just staring in front of the computer, so we're not running, and we have this constant simmering, more elevated cortisol level. Like, it's almost like you're seeing the lion on Twitter or Facebook or whatever, but you don't run, and it just stays there all day. Like, I almost think, like, having no opinions is the best way to reduce stress.
Yeah, so look, I took out all my, you know, chances to see the news, to hear the news. I'm in the books, and, you know, sometimes, I can go to Netflix and see something that I really picked up. But otherwise, I'm like, books is like 1, 3, 5 years horizon. They're not immediate. They don't stress me. You know, I have enough stress at family, at my longevity vision fund work. I don't need more sources of that. I have a funny number for you. Like, before invention of smartphones, our attention span for humans was 15 seconds. So the fish in the bowl had 9 seconds attention span. So after
what does that mean? That what does it mean? Attention span.
Attention
in this context?
Span, like, it's just amount of time you can focus on one thing. So fish in the bowl, every 9 seconds, it switched the attention from plant to the other fish.
I probably need Adderall.
So like, For humans, it was 15 seconds. Right now, we have less attention span than fish in a bowl. It's 8 seconds now. So every 8 seconds, our mind is switching from one thing or another to the message, from message you receive to another conversation, to another external shock or piece of news or emails of someone passing by. So this is ridiculous. If we're in the business of creating long-term achievement, creating long-term self-realization on being happy, what you can do with just by switching your attention and your focus every 8 seconds from one thing to another?
Let me ask, I can watch TV for a half hour, an hour, and my attention won't switch?
Yes, of course, but I'm not sure. I've seen a lot of people who are watching something without actually looking at their iPhone or whatever the phone they have. Looking at Messenger.
I'm going to tell my wife this because she constantly, I always say, you've got to respect the story. You can't look away or you'll miss every something in the story. So I know I have a very good attention span, at least for things I love and enjoy. And maybe that's kind of the key there, is find more things to love so that your attention span doesn't go down. But now I want to start to veer into the genomics. One of the most hopeful things I read in both your book and David Sinclair's book for the short term is Yamanaka factors.
Yeah.
Maybe you can explain that and where we are with that. Like, that seems incredible.
Yeah. So basically there's a number of modifications you can do with particular genes. These are particular genes that if you change the expression of this, if you reprogram how they express themselves and you involve them, you actually can reverse aging processes in your body. This is how it works. And it's been amazing because with this, I think David Sinclair has been able to reverse blindness, or you can reverse a lot of aging processes. So far we've done it in mice and some other animals. So if you apply this technology and you change the expression of these particular longevity genes, it's just amazing. And you do experiments in mice. In some of the cases, it turns gray hair to normal back again. And it's, people are big fans of judging aging on the in the form of our external appearance. So that's why I'm always using this as an example. So it is an opportunity. It's a very promising discovery that we all using in our age reversal experiment. So it's called epigenetic reprogramming, and it's obviously the future. It's more and more experiments right now happening in the labs. So I do think in the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to have breakthroughs in terms of using this Yamanaka factors to reverse aging. But again, it comes down to regulator and people ethics. People hate the idea of us stopping aging. People hate the idea that we can actually redefine ourselves on DNA level, because people always, like, we're living in a society where inequality gap is widening all the time. So people always looking at the pieces of science or development of technology as a threat, as just another opportunity to broaden this inequality gap rather than to close it. And that's actually my belief. So the positive thing about longevity, it can be one of the unifying themes for countries, for societies. And I actually agree with your earlier point when you say that because of democratization of technology all the time with enormous speed, what I like about companies that we invested in through Longevity Vision Fund, they all bring down the cost of the healthcare by 10 to 20, not percent, but times. So whether we invest in early cancer diagnostic, organ regeneration, gene editing and gene therapy, it's bringing down the cost of particular healthcare intervention with particular outcome by a factor of 10 to 20. Sometimes it's even 50. So that's very exciting.
Let me ask this, and I partially know the answer. Ethics and regulation aside, why can't I take Yamanaka factors or do that and test on myself and try it out and see what happens. Now, the flip side of that is, from what I understand in the latest research, you know, we don't really know the effects of changing one gene has on other genes. It's not like these are single gene mutations that cause diseases. They're interacting with maybe thousands of other genes. And so some of these experiments on Yamanaka factors has caused cancer in mice, mm-hmm. and yep. so on. But what if I just want to experiment on myself? Shouldn't I have that right to do that?
Yeah, I mean, you will need to find a lab and scientists to help you with that, which probably going to be extremely difficult to impossible right now.
Yeah.
So that's one. I think, James, look, we all overestimating the importance of us in the history of evolution. I can see the temptation and desire to experiment with your own body and mind. But look, just wait for another 5, 10, and 15 years. Stay on longevity bridge. Do this boring stuff, okay? And it's going to be delivered to you in a much more affordable, less risky, and safer way.
The one thing I question, so when you start getting into, you know, the genes on the DNA, there are thousands and thousands, yeah. and some diseases, like one that's always used as a reference is Tay-Sachs disease. They're what's called single diseases that involve single gene mutations. Yeah. So if we fix that one gene, you solve that hereditary disease.
Yeah.
But other factors in the body, like let's say height or intelligence or other aspects of longevity, for instance, reduction of heart disease, that could be multiple genes, and the mathematical complexity of finding one gene versus many is exponentially large. It's like, you know, it's like counting all the grains of sand on the planet versus mm-hmm. counting, you know, up to 100. And so the complexity might be so much harder, and it's computationally exponential. So not even the fastest computers can help solve it. You know, that's the only worry I have in terms of some of these genetic solutions.
Yeah, obviously the bigger number of genes that you try to influence, the bigger the risk, right? Because you just need to cherry pick what exactly you want to influence. And what we've done in the last 10, 15 years, there's more and more new technologies developing, and which makes this whole gene editing and gene therapy space more available. I just wanted to go through this evolution. Like 20 years ago, it was literally like a handful of people who were about to die, who were just ready for experiments that you just explained. What if I would like to just, you know, be a part of this experiment, right? Then last decade, we were working with so-called rare diseases. And again, I mean, if you combine all of them, it's 400 million people all around the world. But right now, with number of COVID vaccines, they all RNA-based vaccines, which is gene therapy. So today, like one-third or two-thirds of the world can actually enjoy the benefit of gene editing and gene therapy technologies. So this is how fast development goes. So I'm pretty hopeful and optimistic about our ability to influence enormously high combination of genes to achieve desired effect. And like 3,000 genes for longevity and to stop your aging process is not a lot. We just need to have a technology which can combine it and has minimal or negligent side effects.
Right, and I think the issue is that, again, like take Tay-Sachs disease, which is a single gene caused by a single gene mutation. You just have to, that's a switch on and off.
Yeah.
But like if you're trying to change some factor that involves multiple genes, it's hard out of tens of thousands of genes to figure out which combination creates the right effect, because, you know, you're talking about, I don't know, thousands to the thousandth power of number of combinations mm-hmm. to determine which set of genes have which effect, and that becomes computationally too difficult. It's equivalent to solving cryptography.
Yeah, James, look, I think on in terms of the ability of us to draw on computational power, I'm not that concerned. And again, I just want to use the same example, right? Think about just 3,000 genes which define the whole aging process in our body. This is not a lot. Are we ready to influence all of them through a particular technology? Obviously, no. But like 20 years ago, it cost us, what, $3 billion and 6 years to sequence a human genome. One. These days, I mean, I understand this is, you know, genome of the COVID, not of the human being. Like early 2020, it took just a couple of days to people in US, China, UK, Russia, Australia to sequence genome of COVID and start developing vaccine. So like if COVID happened like 50 or 100 years ago, it would be completely different tragic event in the history of evolution, but not today. I mean, it's still pretty sad and it's been dramatic times for us last year and this year. But like in comparison to what could have been happened, it's just completely different. And it's all driven by computational power, science, and the beauty of artificial intelligence.
Right, like you mentioned in the book, it took 55 years to develop a polio vaccine, and here it took less than a year for COVID.
Yeah, just a few months, yeah. And it's all about testing capabilities and vaccine development. And we obviously, we just don't know details, but there's a number of big pharma companies and using artificial intelligence as enabler, working on the drugs against COVID. So it might not be a vaccine, it might be a drug. So this will come probably late this year, next year as well.
And the Yamanaka factors, which, you know, affect, you know, different genes and so on, this right now seems to be one of the most hopeful experiments. But I want to go one step further, which you also talk about in the book, which is what about, you know, a lot of the problems with aging is our cells get older, maybe they become zombie cells, creating more inflammation, meaning they die, but they don't get flushed out of the system.
Yeah.
And you mentioned a bunch of cellular things that can happen that are theories of related to aging. What about, and you mentioned this in the book, what about the idea of returning cells to their basically their baby state? So like using stem cells and using epigenetics to getting new stem cells in your body, in your aging body, returning them to their pluripotent state, their baby state, and then using epigenetics to kind of program them, tell them what to do. Where are we with that? Because that obviously reverses the clock pretty heavily and theoretically would work when you think about it.
Yeah. Look, I mean, this is what Yamanaka factors and some other technologies would do. And there's it's just a huge number of things that you can do on a cellular level, right? So with this in mind, it's... I think it's just another 5 to 10 years when we will be able to reprogram our cells. And look at what is happening like in the field of immuno-oncology right now. T cells, like the cells responsible for how your immune system works, taken from your body or particular donor body, reprogrammed, and they just put back in the body of particular person who suffers from cancer. So you have an example of highly personalized solution, which is already working. So immuno-oncology as a part of genetic and gene therapy field is already working. Right now it's very expensive. It's $100,000 in some of the cases. But like the cost of this gonna democratize itself pretty soon. So it's not something from the science fiction book. Again, this is gonna be available for us for some of the applications in the next 5 to 10 years. And I think what is more promising here is our ability to regenerate thymus, this little organ which disappears or shrinks in size when we turn, well, somewhere around 20.
Wait, what's it called?
It's called thymus.
How do you spell it?
Thymus is thymus, I think. Yeah.
Ah, I see. Right. They make the T cells.
And like it's responsible for when you are at the youngest stage of your life, your immune system is working like a hell. It's super efficient. Whatever happens with you, with few very sad exceptions, you're going to recover. The problem with thymus gland is that after you reach anywhere between 18 and 23, 25 years, it starts to shrink. So your immune system starts to degrade. So it works less efficiently. And like one of the companies that we're investing in, it's called like Genesis, is helping us to restore the thymus. And actually they're using our own lymph nodes to regrow thymus inside our body. It sounds like sci-fi. And their first program is with liver. So they're using our lymph nodes to regrow the liver. And they started human, they just received FDA approval this year. And they started human trials this year already. So if you have dysfunction in liver, all they do, they take donor liver, split it in 50 to 70 pieces, use very simple laparoscopic operations inside your lymph node. And then in the course of 3 to 6 months, you have an ability to regrow your organ inside your own body in a very personalized way.
And so where are they in that? Like, have they seen any evidence that regrowing the thymus is, or slowing down the involution of the thymus will help people live longer?
Yeah, so there's a number of studies behind it. And one, I think it's called TRIIM, T-R-I-I-M, has been done, I think it was back in 2018. All they've done, in addition to all the interventions, which, you know, we think extend our lifespan and help with age reversal, They also supplied, I think it was 9-man study. So it's just very small, not really statistically representative study, but it was pioneering. What they've done, they included the growth hormone for thymus in the set of interventions that they've done in course of the year. And they've been able to reverse aging based on biomarkers in this particular group. So it's obviously they were not regrowing this, but they were using growth hormones to help thymus to regrow and reinstall and improve your immune system level.
Okay, don't forget to listen to the next episode, part two of this, where Sergey gives specific advice on how to grow younger.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.